Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Special Dishes, amazing conversation with New York Times bestseller Joe Pisaneski. Why We Love Baseball, A History in 50 Moments. I have the book right here, Joe. My first question to you, what was 51?
Yeah, well, you know, there are actually more than 50 moments in here. I squeezed a whole bunch of other moments in here. But I left a bunch. I left a bunch on the table. One that I imagine would be very close to your heart is I did not, even though I wrote an essay about it, I did not actually get Mike Piazza's 9/11.
That was my second question.
Yeah, I did not get that
either. I'm just curious. We had a lot of great stuff. How did you draw the line with Mike?
Well, with Mike, it was very specific because I wrote at great length about Derek Jeter's home run, Mr. November home run, and talked a lot about 9/11. And I didn't want to sort of repeat myself or sort of say a lot in there. So it was really very specific to that. Because the Jeter home run was so emotional, but look, it's one of the all-time great moments for sure.
I was there; it was incredible. So Hank Aaron, number one, is a home run king. Your reasoning for that, Joe?
Yeah, that was a bit of a tough one. I mean, I think most people probably, when you say what's the greatest moment in baseball history, would talk about Jackie Robinson.
And that was two, right?
Talked about Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby and sort of the continuation.
Different dates, right.
Yeah. But what I thought about with Henry Aaron is that's where Jackie Robinson's story leads in my mind. Like, you know, he breaks the color barrier, and it's really only a beginning, you know. I mean, it takes many, many years, as you know, for baseball to become really truly integrated, and there's a lot of pain along the way, and of course at the end of the day, Henry Aaron dealt with so much on his way to breaking Babe's record, and I thought that's the crescendo right there is him breaking the record.
You know, a sidebar, that spring Ron Swoboda was with the Braves, and he told me the horror stories, what he went through the spring, you know, and I'm Ron, you know, and he was only there for a little bit, I think through May, but he just told me all that Henry was going through and everything. And three, I thought was not a surprise, but an unusual one, Jason Hayward's clubhouse speech after in the end of the World Series in 2016.
Yeah, I felt like the Cubs winning that World Series, it's so recent that it's kind of hard to sort of, you know, when we think of all-time great moments, we think of the shot heard around the world and Willie Mays catch and everything. And it's not been long enough for that incredible Game 7 and the Cubs finally winning the World Series to really sink in. But to me, it's one of the top five moments in the history of baseball. And you know, you can reduce it to a lot of things, but I love that Jason Hayward speech that was there during the rain delay.
What's the motto? You only have a clubhouse meeting when your best pitcher is pitching that night. You know, maybe because I'm old, I have a personal relationship with a lot of your top things. I'll give you an example. Touch 'em all, Joe, Game 6 of the World Series. Tell me why you picked Joe Carter. I'll tell you my story.
Yeah, I'm dying to hear your story. I mean, look, obviously that's, you know, three walk-off home runs in the World Series history. And just an incredible, incredible moment, incredible call, the touch 'em all Joe. And Joe Carter was such an incredible guy. That to me was an obvious choice, but I'd love to hear your Joe Carter story.
Okay, so I'm working for MLB that in 93. I'm in the Phillies dugout, expecting to get Lenny Dykstra, Mitch Williams. Boom, home run. I rush out to home plate. I was the second person to meet him at home plate. Hey, Joe, Jay Harvard's from MLB. I need you for a couple interviews. He did everything I went to ask him. About 6-7 years ago, we were in an All-Star game someplace. He comes up to me and says, you know, you're in every photo in my house from that scene. I mean, he was so gracious. As soon as he touched it, Joe, I need you right away. I didn't give the poor guy time to celebrate.
But it's so great.
The other one was Eckersley. I don't believe what you just seen. It was Joe Buck's call.
Sure,
I have a story that one too.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's my favorite because it's Jack Buck and Vin
Joe Jack
Scully, Buck. each having you know, legendary calls for that one Kirk Gibson home run off of Eckersley, and so I break down a little bit of both of those calls, but again, love to hear what your connection is.
So again, I'm in the Oakland dugout trying to get Eckersley working for MLB. So when he hit the home run, I had to run over to the Dodger dugout, wait in line for Gibson. You know, I didn't get him right away. I mean, that was it's probably like the scene from The Natural. You know, Joe Hobbs comes up to you with one leg, but those are two. You know, and we have something else to come in your other book, Baseball 100. Willie Mays was number one, right?
Yes.
I idolized Willie Mays, and I can remember the catch is one of your things. I was watching the game with my dad, and he went back and made the catch. And all these years, for me, the throw was more remarkable than the catch. And one thing I enjoyed, that was the only out Don Little got in the game. We got
big words.
And he came in to sell Leo DeRocher, I got my man. Right.
Yeah. It's one of my all time favorite stories he manager comes over to him and he's like, hey, I got my man. I mean, you know,
was that the game Dusty Rhodes won in extra innings? I forget. I mean,
he had the incredible game. You're right about the throw, though. I mean, that it gets overlooked. He and you know this, Willie Mays often said that the hard part was the throw. Because Larry Doby was on
second.
That
was his second base. He was worried about Doby.
He absolutely could have tagged up and run all the way in. And the throw, as you know, it wasn't like it was on line or anything, but just getting the ball back in the infield was all he was trying to do, and it worked great.
You know, Joe, I switched jobs a couple of years ago. I'm not taking your alumni players. And one of the things I'm probably most proud of or happy was that we retired Willie's number 2 years ago. And honestly, we got some flack for some media people. He only played a year and a half. He hit 216. He dropped the ball in the World Series. But he was so much more than that, you know. And Steve Cohen understood that. He fulfilled the pledge from the Payson to retire his number. And Willie was really thrilled with that. I mean, anyway, what he meant to the game, don't you think? I mean,
No question. I'm so thrilled, and you were such a big part of that, and it was so important. Not only, I mean, look, you're right. He was not with the Mets very long, but he was with the New York Giants for years. I mean, he was such an important part of New York baseball, and you think of Mantle, Mays, and Duke Snider in that stretch of time, and you know, all in the heart of New York City. Obvious, you know, to me, it's an obvious thing, and I'm so glad that you were able to do it. And people who pushed back were just wrong. They were just wrong.
It really meant a lot to him, you know. And what I wanted to do this year, this week is the 50th anniversary of him retiring from baseball. We said goodbye, America. And unfortunately, he's not healthy enough to come back. And we had Cleon Jones and Ron Hodges and Felix Beyond from the 73 team here, you know, to do that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Really, all of the topics I picked out, I have a Mets tie-in. Unlikely home runs, right?
Yeah.
I was there for Cologne. I was there for Rick Camp. Let me tell you, where you go into it. So it's the 18th inning. I'm sitting there in Atlanta with Joe McElvain, haven't eaten anything about 8 hours. We think we have the game won. Gary Carter's telling the infielders to come in. I see Danny Heap go until I say, oh, my God, this is going to be a freaking home run. It was unbelievable. I mean, that was an easy one for you to pick out.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that I love that. I mean, it's July 4th, and like you say, the game goes on in 18 innings. You know, there was a rain delay right before the game started.
Right.
So the game started late, and then it's in the 18th inning, and Rick Camp comes to the plate. And Dale Murphy had one of my favorite lines in the book where he said, you know, people thought that Rick Camp couldn't hit, but we were his teammates and we saw him in the cage every day and we knew he couldn't hit. I mean, it was like, that's how bad.
That guy, we got five runs the next year, but Atlanta got three and Darling pitched
got Rick Camp to end the game, which is the way it should have gone in the first place. Just a great part of baseball history.
And I wasn't there for Al Weiss's home run in the World Series, but for me, that's a testimony to how Gil Hodges managed. You know, speaking to the 69 guys, you utilize everybody in the roster. So Al comes up at a big spot in the World Series, ties the game in game five.
Yeah, and just an incredible moment. But he actually had a couple of very big moments that year against the Cubs, and in that big series against the Cubs, he had a couple of huge hits. They couldn't get him out in that series for some reason. And obviously the home run was incredible.
Can I one bone to pick with you in an unforgettable catch? Or how did you title it, Joe? I forget. Backhanded catches?
Barehanded catches.
Barehanded catches. David Wright in San Diego, third base. Do you remember?
I remember this.
Former Met, but, you know, did you remember that one at all?
I did remember. It's an incredible play. I mean, when you list it down to five, it's tough to get everything in there. But yeah, I mean, yeah. And what a player, by the way. I mean, you know, and you got to see him from beginning to end. I mean, when you think about David Wright, don't you think that's a guy who, if he could have stayed healthy, if a couple of other things could have
come,
that's a Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah, no offense to Scott Rowland. I mean, to me, he's better than Scott Rowland, you know, and he had the back issues, the neck issues, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever had any contact with David, but as good a person he is, as good a player he was, seven-time All-Star, he's a 100 times, better person.
Yeah.
You know, I loved your section on the meltdowns. I was, Dave Kingman, I can tell a story, actually roomed with my house for a summer and have a place to live. And, tell him about that one first.
Well, I mean, that's the Tommy Lasorda of the famous meltdown after Dave Kingman hit three home runs and a reporter sort of asked him, what did you think of Kingman's performance? And, you know, you can go on YouTube either get the not safe for work version of it or the beeped out version, but it's hilarious and wonderful in every way.
And I was there for the Mike Piazza, Roger Clemens thing. I was never so mad in the press box when I saw that. Of course, and listen, Mike owned Clemens. I mean, I think he had two grand slams off him in a year. And we said, the explanation was that he thought it was a ball and he threw it back at him. I mean, I'm crazy. I mean,
no, absolutely.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Joe.
No, I mean, it's like, and I, this is how I write it, but we actually, in a World Series game, we watched a pitcher throw a bat at a player. And I it's still mind blowing. That's not something that people talk about. I mean, they, you know, he didn't throw Clemens out of the game. I mean, it was.
Or Mike should have gone and had a fight and get suspended in the series. That was the other blowback. People were, well, why didn't Mike go after him? And he said, I didn't want to take the chance of getting thrown out of a World Series game. So
that's right. Well, and he would have. If he'd gone after him, he would have gotten thrown out of the game. And Clemens probably would not have. I for some reason, him throwing the bat wasn't good enough. But yes, one of the all-time explanations where he said, I thought it was the ball, which is just ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous.
Oh, we go to great catches. I agree with Svoboda in the World Series. How did you differ over Tommy Agee's two catches in Game 4?
Yeah, I mean, both incredible. I mean, I just picked Svoboda just because it's so striking. It's such a striking catch, and not that
he wasn't a great fielder.
He wasn't a great fielder. That's another thing. Like, so, you know, for him to come through in that moment, don't you think it sort of signifies that 69 Mets team?
No question. You know, and when one word says it off in the other one of your headlines is Buckner, you know,
yeah.
I remember sitting in the clubhouse. So we're down to two strikes, two outs, bottom of the 10th, so losing by two runs. I'm sitting with Keith and Darryl Johnson, who's one of our coaches, and I'd gone up to go to the bathroom. And this year, the Gary got the hit. And he said, sit there, we're going to have a rally. It wasn't hard to pick Buckner, right? I mean, that's a, you know.
No. Look, the moment was going to be one of the great, one of the all-time moments for sure. But, you know, as I write about this, and you can speak directly to this, that moment has always been more attached with Red Sox heartbreak than it's with Mets success, right? I mean, you know, but that is not specifically the ball going through Buckner because the game was already tied, but that inning has got to be the greatest moment in Mets history since 69, I would think.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right, Joe. I mean, we had two strikes and the add-on to the story, Buckner and Mookie became really good friends after the series. And Mookie always felt badly that Buckner was demonized. People forget over 2,700 hits, an all-star. Should he be on the field, whatever. But Mookie, and they did business stuff together. They did signings together. Mookie always said publicly, even if he doesn't fumble the ball, I can beat it out. So he's trying to. But there was a friendship. And Mookie was really generally touched after Bill died, you know.
I mean, it was sad the way that got pinned on Buckner. He probably shouldn't have been out there. Two, people do forget this. The game was already tied. It wasn't like that was the winning run. Right. The game was already tied. It's bizarre that they had always put Dave Stapleton into those games in those situations. So it was very strange that Buckner was still out there.
I got my – what was the first Red Sox chip? Was it 07? When did he win the first time?
04.
So I tweet, you know, stupid stuff. So I tweeted right before the World Series, all's forgiven, Buckner and Mookie will be in Fenway Park to throw out the first pitch, which was – I just made up. And Joe, it caused such a hubbub in the media. They called Buckner, who was I think he lives in Utah, Montana, where he lived. And I know nothing about it. The Red Sox were screaming at me. So I started a hubbub. Another thing which I was there for, unfortunately, when Alex Fernandez died in Miami. Tell a story from where, I mean, we were there the night it happened. So, you know, relayed why you picked that one.
Well, I mean, it was the, you know, Dee Gordon hitting the home run him coming up the next time up and he was very, very close. They were very close friends,
right.
And Gordon stepped up and first he took the same stance as his friend, right. and then he got in position, and then, you know, Dee Gordon Strange was not a home run hitter, to say the least.
He didn't have any home runs on here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then he hits the home run, and I mean, it's so emotional, and you know, sad, but beautiful. And there are a lot of moments to me in baseball history that are like that. That are just they're so touching because they sort of border on sadness and tragedy, and it's this triumph, and obviously that's one of the most beautiful moments ever.
A lot of people think, and I don't think it is known how much of a competitor Bartolo Colon was, that he grooved the ball for him. I don't think that was the case. I think it was, you know, like, remember in the 9/11 game when the Braves and I, when we embraced not when it meant before. I think it was one of those moments that I don't think Bartolo would have purposely grooved the ball to him, but it was sitting in the press box that I just can't believe this happened.
No, you know? I don't think he grooved the ball to him, but I think he was definitely going to throw him a strike. I mean, you know, right, Bartolo, right. Of course, had at that point incredible control. He was going to throw him a strike. I mean, he was going to challenge him. He wasn't going to walk him in that situation.
Yeah, it was just an amazing moment in the press box. You know, I'm a big Giant fan. Shot heard around the world. Russ Hodges call. Great selection on my part. Your part.
Yeah, it definitely had to be in there. That I've seen that Russ Hodges and listened to that Russ Hodges call a million times. And, you know, it's very, very funny that Red Barber hated that call. He always said that call was unprofessional, right? Because he was such a, you know, it was so, you know, so much of a fan and screaming and yelling. But Red was wrong. I mean, Red was the ultimate professional. He had his own call of that home run. But it's the Russ Hodges calls that goes through history.
Ralph Branca was Bobby Valentine's father-in-law was Ralph Branca. I got to know Ralph a little bit through the years, and he and Bobby had a great relationship. I guess Bobby's been on record. Giants had a sign stealing thing going. Right. Bobby was on record. He didn't know the pitch was coming, supposedly. But I think the Giants were 55-17, which you wrote after a certain point, and they came back and won the game. But I mean, whether he did or not, it was still one of the one of the great calls. You know.
It's unquestionably one of the all-time moments. And you know, what I always liked is you're right. Ralph Branca and Bobby Thompson had this incredible relationship, and they traveled the country together and did card shows together and various other things, made appearances, and very, very much, you know, had like almost a brotherly relationship.
Yeah.
But you know this. Ralph Branca is pretty certain that he knew what pitch was coming. Like they had that Stein stealing system that they used, you know, throughout their comeback of the Dodgers. And, Bobby Thompson always insisted, I didn't know what was coming, but Ralph Branca just kind of smiled and just kind of.
He was just a gentleman. He was animosity. He didn't. No. You know, I mean, what a way to lose a game, you know, winning 4-1 going into the ninth inning. And one of my favorite Giants, Don Mueller, the Mandrake, the magician, got knocked to the first run, but it was crazy. Two more home runs I wanted to, unfortunately, weren't included in the book. Daryl Strawberry's home run in Montreal when he hit the roof, and in '85 when he hit the clock in the 12th inning we had a big game with the Cardinals. Were those considered all? There's so many, Joe. I know, you know.
Yeah, there's so many. Yes, I mean, look, I love Daryl Strawberry, and I still think you saw it a million times. So I mean, I'd be curious to hear what you think. But wasn't Daryl Strawberry like, if not the greatest, one of the greatest batting practice hitters ever?
He used to wow the opposite. He used to come out watch him hit. You know. Yeah, so you made some references, and we were fortunate that Gil Hodges was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and the late Vince Scully wrote an essay really on his deathbed that the committee saw and helped Gil get in. But the stuff with Jackie and the embrace with Pee Wee Reister talked about, that I didn't realize how big a part that Gil was to helping Jackie, you know, acclimate himself. Like Pee Wee Reese was the guy on the left side of the infield, right side of the infield, and Gil was the other guy. But it was just warming, all the stuff with Jackie that you have in the book and what he did, and really, you know, Gil 35 times on the ballot didn't get in, and finally, you know, thanks to Vince Scully and Joe Torre was on the panel, helped him get in. And so much stuff in your book involving Jackie, and character does mean something. All these years,
sure it does.
You know, Gil, you know, didn't get in, but thankfully he's there now.
Yeah, it was so wonderful to see him get in. That was a wonderful, wonderful class. Of course, my great friend Buck O'Neill went in that year. Tony Oliva went in that year. But Gil Hodges, I mean, nobody ever said a bad word about Gil Hodges, right? I mean, he was
a war hero, family guy.
Yeah. Right. And probably more stories about people in Brooklyn just like talking to Gil Hodges on the street than any other Dodger player. I mean, he was a part of the community, and then of course goes to LA and was part of that. And then what he does with the Mets. I really think, and it's great to see him. I connect him and my friend Buck O'Neill in this way. I think the Hall of Fame has never been as good. The voters, and I'm one of them, have never been as good at looking at a life in baseball rather than looking at specific things. Was he a good enough player? Was he a good enough manager? Here's a guy whose life in baseball, and of course he died much too young, but his life in baseball with the Dodgers and then managing the 69 Mets, that's a Hall of Fame life. It's a shame it took so long for it to happen.
You know who you mentioned too, Joe, and I was over at Hinchcliffe Stadium about 2 months ago where Larry Doby played, and he kind of gets overlooked with the Jackie Robinson stuff, right? Yes. I mean, what he did.
Yeah, I write a lot about that. I mean, here's the thing about Larry Doby. He went through the same sorts of things because, as you know, in those days in particular, the American and National League were completely separate. So for him to be the first in the American League, he went through exactly the same things. That was the first time any of those teams played against somebody who was African-American at that time. But more to the point, Jackie was ready for the moment. He was older. He was already famous. He was famous in college for being a football player, track star, basketball player. He was in the Army. He went through the whole issues, where he was court-martialed and he fought the court-martial. He was a famous, famous person already. And he went to the minor leagues and he dealt with everything he had to deal with there. Larry Doby had none of that. Larry Doby was much younger. He didn't go to the minor leagues. He was unknown. It was not like Jackie Robinson. One day he was on the Newark Eagles. The next day he's on Cleveland. And he didn't get the opportunity to sort of be prepared for the moment the way that Jackie Robinson was. And he really struggled, by the way. His first year was a really rough year. But he triumphed over that anyway. And I don't think that story gets told enough.
You know what they're trying to do, Joe? I saw Mayor Patterson where Larry was from. They're trying to get like the Iowa game, the Field of Dreams game there.
Yeah.
To honor the from the Negro League, and that's what their goal is. They're renovating the stadium, you know. Listen, I got to congratulate you. Which was your first New York Times bestseller? Was Patton? Was it Paterno or Baseball 100?
Paterno was my first bestseller, and then I've had this is my third since then. I've been really lucky.
Well, it's an honor. I mean, I read the book section every Sunday to get in on a couple of times. It's great. Hey, I had to tell fans, you know what's about this book? It's an easy read, Joe. You don't have to do it at once. It's very readable. Great stories, human interest of any baseball fan. And I'm old enough, Joe, to find a Met connection with everything you wrote in this book, Joe.
I love
just
that.
I'm going through the stuff. I said, well, I was there. I can still remember in Atlanta. I was getting ready to eat, and I said, I can still remember Danny Heap going to left field. Oh, my God. This guy, poor Tom Gorman hasn't lived that down all these years. But
yeah,
hey, listen,
yeah, that was
all the best with the book. It's a great read. People should get it. And again, thank you for your time, Joe. Appreciate you.
Well, absolutely. Thanks, Jay.